You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is my amazing co-host, William Palmer. And in today's episode, our guests will be talking about how you can become financially free through real estate investing.
That's right, Charles. And I'll also talk about how passive investing is one of the great ways to build wealth and free up your time, and how he went from heartbreak to hustle to become a successful investor. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
William, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Charles, and super excited to be here as always. And for those of you that can't see, my light just went out, so the visual on my end is not going to be great for now, but super excited to dive in today's guest. And we started chatting a little bit before and started cracking some jokes. So this ought to be a good episode.
Absolutely. I just love it, William. Like when we have, you know, guests that we connect with instantly, and it's like, we're just friends. We're just having some good fun. But, you know, it's just so amazing, like all of his accomplishments, William. I'm just super excited for our guest to help him share his journey and how he, you know, founded the Next Level Income, showing others how to become financially free. Who don't want to become financially free, right, William?
Everybody should want to become financially free. And yeah, like you said, very interested in and why he started it, how he started it. Because I think about having started my own business about 6 months ago, and I think about something that large. And he's been investing for 20 years into private lending, syndicating for with over 1.5 billion in commercial properties. I want to know how. and the why is super important. And so, yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to hearing from him for sure.
Absolutely, man. Like I got to hear his story. You know, sometimes we're a little bit selfish, you know, because we bring the guests on so we can hear them speak. But, you know, if you're listening, you know, guests, you know, this is for you too. But William and I get the benefit. And so we are so excited to introduce our guest today, who's none other than Chris Larson. Chris, what's up, brother?
Gentlemen, great to be here this evening. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's so good to have you, man. Man, you have a great smile, man. Just so you know.
I think you, Charles.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So Chris, man, I am sure our audience is just as excited as me and William to hear your story. Give us your backstory. Tell us about your investing journey, how you got started, man.
Yeah, well, first off, thank you both for having me here this evening. I love what you're doing with the podcast. And I think you're right, William. Everybody should strive for financial independence because I think it really brings out the best in everybody. And that's our mission at Next Level Income, to help you achieve financial independence if you're listening, and also help you find those opportunities that are out there. And, you know, when that dawned on me, when I was right up the road from where William lives, and I was in Blacksburg, Virginia. I was going to school at Virginia Tech, and I went for biomechanical engineering. So if you can see on my wall, I have sparsely decorated behind me here. But yeah, I went to Virginia Tech. I was, like the old story. You grow up, you get good grades, you get a good job, and you'll be happy. Well, I found my passion, I found my love when I was about 14 years old in cycling. And cycling is kind of a misfit sport. And I felt like I didn't really fit in. I was in orchestra and math club and band. And, you know, I played baseball and basketball. But I kind of floated among all of these kind of mainstream activities that probably a lot of you listening are saying, yeah, like I did that or this or one of those or some of those, but I really didn't fit in. And then I went to a bike race. I got introduced to cycling by a family friend. And I talk about this in my book, which by the way, if you want to grab a copy, you can get it for free. If you're listening at nextlevelincome.com, just click on the book link and we'll either get you a free ebook or you can put in your address and I'll send you a free copy. And his name's Clint Provenza. Clint introduced me to the sport of cycling. I was 13, got a mountain bike. This was in the early 90s. So as you mentioned, William, you know, I was investing for 20 some years. And actually, what is it, Charles? It's been 25 years this year since I bought my first property. But I went to school because I said, all right, I want to get an education, but I wanted to race my bike. So I raced in high school, I raced in college, and I met my best friend whose name was also Chris. And we actually were about the same size. We're both named Chris. We raced on the same team. People would get us confused. He was a year younger than me. And he also was accepted and was coming to Virginia Tech. Came home after my freshman year. We went to a race together as we usually did. And at that race, he had a brain hemorrhage and died. And I drove to the hospital. I actually took his clothes into the hospital for him. And the doctor brought me back and told me the news. And I was the one that ID'd Chris. I went back to school and I raced my bike another year. And then I realized that, you know, riding your bike around in circles was kind of silly. You know, we live in America. If you're in America, if you make $35,000, $40,000 a year, you're in the top 1% in the world in income. If you get to compete in athletics or even just go to the gym, you know, or compete in a sport recreationally, that is so, you know, small a percentage of the population of the world that gets to do these things for fun. You know, most people, they get their exercise because they're moving wood or gardening, you know, to help sustain their lifestyle. And, you know, we're so affluent in America that we actually have to go to the gym or participate in sports to kind of experience these difficulties that, you know, a lot of people have to experience every day. And all these things kind of dawned on me. And I said, you know what, I'm meant to do more. And the other thing is, I don't want to have any regrets in life. And not only do I not want to have any regrets, but I want to make Chris proud and say, hey, Chris, lived life to the fullest to honor not only the life that I have, but also the life that he didn't have. And as I went through this process over the course of many months, I said, you know what? If I want to do these things, I need money. Like, I can't be constrained by having financial needs. So I said, I'm going to be financially independent. I'm going to be wealthy, like truly rich. So I started reading books. I was trading in the stock market. And after less than a year, I was making $5,000 day trading in the stock market as a junior in college. And that was great. But laying there one morning at 3 a.m. after not sleeping all night, because I was so stressed about trades and this and that, I was like, this is not investing. This is not, you know, wealth. This is not fun. And I said, there's got to be a better way. So I kept learning. I kept reading. I read 250 books. I got an MBA in finance. That's the other degree hanging on the wall back there, which education's, you know, important. But what I learned outside of those classes was more important. And what I learned was that real estate was going to be my path to financial independence. And I bought that first property. And then I bought the next property, which actually happened to be next door, which was my neighbor's townhouse. So I had two townhouses next door, 3 bedrooms each. I rented out 5 of the 6 bedrooms. And I lived in the 6th one. And not only was I living for free, but I was actually making money. And this was in Blacksburg. Yeah,
that
was
awesome. God.
Yeah. It was right off University City Boulevard, man.
For anybody listening, the prices of real estate in Blacksburg, Virginia is off the charts. It is off the charts right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I got started. And, you know, from that point, I kept buying residential properties. And I said, if I can just have enough properties to bring in, I said, $10,000 a month before debt service. So basically pay the properties off and have $10,000 a month. That was my simple plan to get started. When I started that at 21, and it morphed into commercial properties and syndications, and that's how we got to doing, you know, well over, you know, $1.5 billion in acquisitions, you know, with my partners. And now we do apartments is where we really got started after residential, and then self-storage, mobile home parks. We also do express tunnel car washes. We have residential development. So, you know, over 25 years, you get to participate in a lot of different things. But that's in a nutshell what kind of motivated me to get into real estate and where we came from to where we are today.
Well, what was the kind of thing? What was the thing that happened, or how did, why real estate specific? What was the thing that like made that pop for you?
Yeah, good question. So I think, you know, I love certain movies. Like, I love Wall Street movies. I love, you know, kind of, you know, the history of Wall Street, the book on, you know, smartest people in the room, the story of long-term capital management, Enron's story. I love all that. I also love, you know, stories about mafia and these sorts of things. Like, it's very interesting to me. Stock market's very exciting, But those things are also very stressful. Like if you want to make your money in the stock market or make your money, you know, selling drugs or in the mafia, you can make a lot of money, but it's super stressful. There's a lot of downside risk to that. So, you know, laying in bed at 3 a.m. in the morning at 20 years old, I realized that like there's, you know, I was thinking, I'm a very pragmatic person. And my father dying at 5, my father also passed away. I was 5 years old. I think it made me realize that, you know, life is very precious and days are precious, you know, because my father was 41 when he died. You know, I'm 5 years older than that at this point. You know, it's like, it's kind of like I'm living on borrowed time in a sense from a, you know, a mental perspective. You know, I look at how my father's life evolved and ultimately ended. And I was like, okay, so from a pragmatic perspective, William, I said, what can you buy that has the greatest degree of predictability? And when I was doing my MBA, there's a metric called the Sharpe ratio, which I talk about in my book. And the Sharpe ratio is essentially risk-adjusted return. And when I looked at all the asset classes, real estate was the asset class with the best Sharpe ratio. It had the best risk-adjusted returns, which means, you know, essentially you're going to have the highest return within a range with the lowest degree of variability. Now, most of the time, you're not going to get like a 40 or 50% return annually on real estate, but you're also probably not going to get a 40 or 50% loss. So I said, hey, if I can get a 10, 15, 20% return with predictability, you know, and cash flow, to me, you know, that's great over a long period of time. In my book, I use the 12% a year metric. And I think that's a very achievable metric, you know, whether you're active or even passive in real estate. So that's what really drew me to it from a pragmatic perspective.
That's awesome, man. What an amazing story, man. And I also was like, you know, as I was reading up your bio, I realized that you're an engineer, man. Just so you know, I'm a fellow engineer as well, man. So
we got a few things in common, Charles.
We do. Yeah. We got some good things in common, man.
Yeah.
So now talk about that a little bit. Like how, you know, did you ever like work, like I said, as an engineer and how long, and like talk about that journey becoming an engineer to an investor guru.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, this is, you know, some like we were talking about for the show, like I'm an open book and I tell it how it is. And some people don't like to hear that. And I'm okay with that because I feel like I try to be pragmatic and I try to say what's true. And, you know, what's true is if you're seeking to have a better life, you just have to work hard. People are like, oh, Chris, how did you do it? Like your life's great. You do this, you do that. You know, like we're about to do a 2-week road trip with my family and go to some lacrosse tournaments and a family reunion and vacation. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do that. But the reality is it took 16-hour days, 6 days a week for a lot of years. And Charles, the way that I kind of came into that, you know, I got my engineering degree, I got my PE. So I took the PE test and passed, but I never really wanted to be an engineer. And when I was fortunate to kind of take a quick step back, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I was in Charlottesville, Virginia in 99. I think it was 1999, might've been 2000. And I was, like I was saying, I read 250 books. I was reading like a book a week at least. And I was always, you know, this was like kind of pre, I think they had just come out with audible.com and I would like listen to some books, but I took a speed reading course. So I was able to kind of, you know, kind of really assimilate information quickly, you know, from a text. And so I was always in the bookstore buying books and I'm in a Barnes and Noble in Charlottesville. And this guy goes, are you looking for a book to read? I'm in the finance section. I go, because I'm looking, he goes, I'm like, yeah, I've read this. I've read that. I've read this. He goes, you should read this. He goes, and he hands me Rich Dad Poor Dad. It had just come out. And I was like, okay. So I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and Robert Kiyosaki talked about being in sales, which I started selling stuff when I was 12 years old, wrapping paper door to door. I also took the garbage out from our local community beach, which was like, I'll tell you what, it's July in Asheville. It's not super hot. It's in the 80s. But when you grow up off the Chesapeake Bay, I grew up in Maryland off the Chesapeake Bay, and it's 90 some degrees and 90 some percent humidity, and you're collecting trash from the community beach, you're talking about like discarded meat, diapers, like that's been cooking, right? So you're talking about maggots and baby poop. It's just disgusting, you know? And then I had a paper route, which, you know, you're in middle school, you're 13, 14, you know, 15 years old, and you're getting up at 5 in the morning to deliver papers in the rain on your bike. You know, it's like, you know, these things kind of get ingrained, you know, inside you. And I'm like, okay, so I knew how to work hard. I knew how to sell. And I'm reading Robert Kiyosaki's book. He talked about sales and real estate. And so the sales portion, that sounded a little bit better than, you know, the trash portion of my life. So I was introduced by a friend I worked for that when I was selling life insurance while I was finishing my MBA to medical device sales. So Charles, I took my biomechanical engineering degree and I wasn't an engineer, but I got to sell those products and got to work with the engineers and the surgeons in the OR. And what was cool was biomechanical engineering at Virginia Tech is a pre-med course, is a pre-med like track. So I really enjoyed being in the OR. I thought that was amazing. And one of the other things is Robert Kiyosaki said, become accredited. So if you're listening today, there's a few things that I think you can take from this. You know, you're going to have to work hard if you want to be financially independent initially. Sales or business is a great path to do that. Real estate is also a great path to do that. And also you want to choose a career, in my opinion, where you can be accredited. And in this case, it's, you know, $200,000 or more a year. So I was able to find a career where I averaged, you know, much more than that over the course of my career. And then the last piece that, you know, there's 1, 2, 3, you know, sales, real estate, work hard, and then be disciplined. So we save 50% of what we made and we put that money into real estate. So while I didn't work in an engineering profession truly, Charles, I feel I was in an engineering role in a sense, but I also got to use the application portion and the communication skills that I developed as well.
That's awesome. Awesome. That's so amazing. Oh, go ahead, William.
Well, how'd you go? You started, you had two houses back to back right next to each other.
Yeah.
How did that grow? How did that transform? Like, yeah. What's that chart look like?
Yeah. So great. That's a great kind of next step. So, you know, and look, it's easy to say, oh, wow. Like, you know, you invest in real estate and you're financially independent. But when you're 20 or 25 years old, you know, saying, hey, you'll be financially independent by the time you're 40 or 35 or 50 it's very kind of abstract and nebulous, right? It's like, that's a long time. I don't want to wait 10 or 50, excuse me. I shouldn't be drinking carbonated water. So, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, it seems like a long time. But look, real estate's a get rich slow process. And that's the thing. Like you could be, you know, Wolf on Wall Street and, you know, hope to make 50% a year trading stocks or penny stocks and or maybe hit it big and get rich super fast. But, you know, I think that, you know, it makes a lot more sense to choose a path that's more predictable. Because if I could tell you, hey, you can be financially independent with a high degree of predictability between 10 and 20 years, it might be 10 years, might be 7 years, you know, but within a really tight range or maybe 5 to 15 years, like I like that. Because here's the thing, if you're listening and you're 20 or 25 years old, and it takes you 10 years to become financially independent, well, now how much risk can you take? I think the world has a lot of things backwards. And one of the things we have backwards is that we tell, you know, young people to take a lot of risk early, but that's not good. Cause that's like saying, hey, like you're going to go play baseball, Charles. And every time you get up to bat, I want you to try to hit a home run every single time. Now, what does that mean? You're going to strike out a lot and you might hit some home runs, but you might get short-term glory, but you're going to lose more times than you're going to win with that strategy. That's why Moneyball is successful. Get on base, hit singles, hit doubles reliably. So that's my strategy. So if you're 20 or 25 years old, you're looking for a career, pick something that you can have a high degree of predictability. Because even if you're 35 or 40 by the time you're financially independent, if you're 40 and you're financially independent, how much risk can you take?
A lot.
As much as you want. Yeah. You could start your own business. You can go work for a startup. You can not work at all. You can let your spouse stay home, you know, with your kids. You can stay home with your kids. You can take a 3-week road trip with your boys to watch them play lacrosse, go to family reunions and do these things. So, you know, that really kind of made a lot of sense to me from that perspective. So, you know, for me, my strategy was very kind of, you know, humble, where it was like, hey, I'm going to buy these properties. So I built a small portfolio of single family properties. And then what happened was we hit the next chapter of our lives where my boys were born. You know, they're 12 and 14 now. So we're talking about 10, 12 years ago. And now my mother had passed away. So we hit this next milestone in my life where it kind of caused me to pause and review everything. when I looked at those single family properties, what I found was while they were cash flowing and while they were increasing in value, my return on equity, because I had held them for a long period of time, again, real estate is a get rich slow asset class, but reliably so, I was earning about 7% on my equity. So what I mean is, let's say I had $10,000 in a property, right? So I bought a $100,000 townhouse at the time, William, in Blacksburg, and I put $10,000 down. That's so a $100,000 townhouse, put $10,000 down, just to reiterate. And I was earning $3,000 a year. That's a 30% return on my investment or my equity. That's really good, right? So 30% return, like cash, like that's a great return. Well, let's say now it's worth $190,000. So now I have $100,000 of equity in this property. And let's say I'm earning $6,000 or $7,000 a year. You're like, well, Chris, you're earning twice as much, you know, and let's say it's been 10 years. That seems great. You know, you've doubled your cash flow, but my return on equity is now 6 or 7%. And by the way, I'm accredited, which means I'm making good money. So let's say I'm making $300,000 a year. I'm paying taxes on that. My after-tax return on equity is like 4%. I was like, this is terrible. So as I talk about in my book, I found out about the multifamily asset class. And I thought multifamily was a lot like single family. But what I found out was that if you invest in multifamily, a lot of the benefits, especially as a passive investor, somebody that was working, you know, 6 days a week, I was on call for 12 years of my life. I didn't have to manage properties anymore. I didn't have to get calls on my honeymoon in Costa Rica, pay $25 a minute to talk to my real estate agent. True story. Now there was a volcano outside the window, so that was kind of cool. But still, you want to be on your honeymoon, not dealing with properties. So what I found was I started investing in these multifamily properties as a passive investor, as a limited partner instead of an active participant. And I earned more than twice what I was getting actively managing my properties. And I had better tax benefits. So I transitioned around that time, which would have been about 15 years ago. So I had my own portfolio for 5-10 years. And then 15 years ago, started investing in multifamily properties. Actually, it was about 12 years ago. And ultimately that led to us doing a JV partnership with the group we were investing with. We syndicated our first deal in 2016, bought a 100-unit apartment complex in Atlanta. And that kicked forward, you know, we've done, you know, 4 or 5 dozen syndications at this point across all those asset classes I mentioned before.
That's pretty awesome. Can you explain what syndication is to those that maybe don't know what that is? Because that's a large word and like it's fascinating to me, but it also is like, to me, it just sounds like, wow, how do you keep track of all the numbers and everybody getting the return?
So it's, you know, I sometimes forget because when you've been doing something for a long period of time, you just throw words around and
acronyms.
That's right. REI, REO, you know, IRR, all these things. So yeah, and if, you know, we just launched a really cool feature on our website at nextlevelincome.com. We have Chris GPT. So you can go on there and you can ask me Chris GPT, ask me questions. And I'll answer your question. So it's everything I've ever said on a podcast, everything I've written, everything I've talked about in there. And it probably is better than me. You know, it remembers everything I've said. It draws on all that and I'll answer your questions. And I think we should do this for the president right now. Like it'd be really cool because it would remember everything he's ever said. You know, we could just put him up, you know, I don't know where we're not using this technology more ubiquitously.
That's
but yeah. So hopefully that I'm trying to be nonpartisan, but I think that would be a great feature. My team tells me that it's better than I am. So that's what I'm saying. Like
really
it's better than me. Yeah. You can ask all those questions.
So you literally created like an AI that would answer like you do?
We did. It took everything I've ever said or produced in print or on podcasts, and we uploaded all those onto a platform. So yeah, it's a virtual Chris Larson. So if you don't like my jokes, it's okay because it doesn't make the jokes. It won't fall for your political trap questions or any of that. It's not as fun as I am, I don't think, but it's smarter than I am. So yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So what is a syndication? You could go and ask Chris GPT, but you know, essentially, and I talk about this again in my book, that real estate's a team sport and syndication is a team sport. So it's, you know, but I think more so, I just took my son to Colorado for a lacrosse tournament and we had the team, we all went out and did a river rafting trip, which I've been doing since I was 13. I've actually rafted the Grand Canyon and that's That picture is back here on my wall to remind me of that amazing trip, which it's a bucket list item for sure. But, you know, you can go and row. My buddy actually solo kayaked the Grand Canyon. And think about this. So he gets in a kayak and he wanted to set the speed record, but the water flow is too low. So he kayaked the entire Grand Canyon in a matter of really hours. You know, it was a couple of days, but really hours. That is like managing your own property, William. So, you know, you buy a property, you do everything yourself, you pack all your gear into your boat, you paddle. Sometimes you get flipped over, you got to swim out of the kayak, you pull it to shore, you drain it. Like, this is managing your own property. Whereas a syndication is like, we're on the Grand Canyon paddling these rafts, and we'd look and we'd see these huge, I mean, they're rafts, but they're huge. They're like tractor trailer rafts with a motor. And they would just like motor through the rapids, like just motor right through. And then these groups would set up camp. And what's wild is that the trip leaders, they'd unpack all the rafts. They'd set up the tents and the cots for everybody that paid to be on these trips. They cooked their meals. We're doing everything ourselves, you know, on our rafting trip. We were a self-guided trip. And I'm looking, I'm like, this is like luxury Grand Canyon. This is amazing. That's what a syndication is. You get to participate in this experience of like the Grand Canyon of investing in real estate, but you get somebody else that gets to take the risk of, you know, figuring out the route, setting up camp every night, you know, cooking dinner, you know, packing, unpacking, doing all that. The syndicator, the operator, is the one that does all that. They find the property, they manage the property, they raise the money, they do all that. But just like the Grand Canyon trip, you put up the money, you get the benefits, but then, you know, that raft guide, they get paid to do something that they love to do, you know? So we get paid as operators, we get paid as syndicators to put all these deals together. And then ultimately the investors get paid first, right? So just like if that raft flips, you know, they're going to save the people that are in the water first. They're going to set up their cots in their tents first. They're going to cook for them first. So, you know, hopefully, you know, they're not swimming in the water, which I say that for a reason. There is still risk. There's risk involved in a syndication. So you may say, this is great. I'm going to get better returns than if I did it myself. I'm not going to have to do any of the work. That doesn't mean there's no downside. That doesn't mean that all these deals are home run deals. You know, maybe they're singles, maybe they're doubles, maybe they're triples, maybe they are home runs. But sometimes, you know, you do swing and miss. You know, sometimes there are, you know, you do strike out. Now, we've been fortunate. We've never lost investor capital, you know, on any deals. But, you know, sometimes deals don't go as well as you planned. And again, just like that river trip, you set out with the route. But one thing is certain in a syndication, whatever the original plan is, something's going to change. The deal's going to take longer. It's going to pay off shorter. You know, it's the rents are going to go up faster or slower. There's all kinds of issues that happen. But again, in a syndication, you have a general partner at the helm, just like that raft, that's going to be dealing with those things. And you limit your worries that you have, even though you're still along for the ride.
What's your favorite? Like, have you syndicated mobile home parks?
Yes. Yeah, we have about 20 right now. Yeah, we got another one under contract right now, as a matter of fact.
Which one do you like better, multifamily or mobile home park syndication?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a good question. Let me get my boys up here and we can figure out which one I love more. That might be an easier. So, no, I say that jokingly, but the thing is, mobile home parks and multifamily are both very similar. Like, they have a lot of the same demographic trends. And what I mean is that we have a ton of demand in this country for housing. We need 4 million new housing units. We need more starter homes. We need more affordable housing, and mobile home parks are the most affordable, but they're actually decreasing in supply. We share that in our investor presentations. Like, the mobile home parks are decreasing, because think about it. If you live in a nice neighborhood and I come along with, you know, my friends and we're like, oh, we're going to put a mobile home park in here. You say, not in my backyard. And we call that NIMBY. People say, I don't want a mobile home park. And the thing is, it makes sense financially to not have a mobile home park, because cities, municipalities, they actually get less tax revenue. So cities aren't really incentivized to have mobile home parks. So it's a shame, because what happens is you eliminate affordable housing for the most needy demographic that's out there. But really, William, what's interesting is if you look at multifamily and mobile home parks, it's kind of a U-shaped phenomenon. So Class A multifamily performs really well, and then the performance kind of drops as you get into lower quality and ultimately like subsidized housing in terms of performance. But then it goes back up when you get into mobile home parks. And the reason is, you know, you kind of have this movement down through the quality, but also through affordability. But mobile home parks have something really unique, which is you have something that's affordable, but also has pride of ownership. Because most of the residents in our mobile home parks, the one we have that we're working on right now, is 90% owner occupied. That means 90% own the home that they live in, and they're just paying lot rent. And you know, in this market, lot rent's $460 per month. So you know, you can own a home, and it may be a $5,000 mobile home, it may be a $50,000 mobile home, but your lot rent is $400 to $500, and that's very affordable compared to you know the affordable multifamily project we're doing in Houston right now. It's more like $1,500 a month, you know, and you can't fit a family in that. You know, so I think they complement one another. And, you know, right now in this cycle, William, I like affordable aspects to the market, but that mobile home park that rents are $460 in that market, we're buying it with in-place rents of $300. So show me a multifamily property where you can raise rents 50% to get to market rate. And I'll give you the same, you know, double thumbs up that I'll give that mobile home park.
That's fantastic. Is there like a size almost? Like, let's say if it's 50 units and above, you want to own just the dirt, but 50 units and below, you want to own the dirt and the trailers. Is there like a number?
That's a great question. And you know, so we look at a few different things. So if you compare and contrast, like first off, I love multifamily. It's the core of our investment strategy. And the challenge is like that mobile home park, we're going to buy for $1.2 million. We could pay cash for that, like write a check right now. If you want to put a large amount of capital together, it's hard to find enough quality mobile home parks that are going to really hit the metrics that I just mentioned to you. You know, so then you go and you buy, say, a $100 million multifamily property where you can put, you know, tens of million dollars of capital in there. You know, so from a scalability perspective, multifamily, it's going to win all day long. But going back to mobile homes, the inverse of ownership is true. And what I mean is that, you know, the 80-20 rule applies in multifamily, whereas about 80% of multifamily properties are owned by institutions, 20% are smaller groups. In mobile home parks, it's the opposite. Only about 20% are owned by large groups, where 80% are owned by small, really mom and pop operators. So we focus on those parks and kind of our specific strategy. We're looking for parks that are, you know, a million is actually pretty low for us, like $2 to $10 million. And that's going to give us the ability to buy from an operator that maybe they bought the park for $500,000 and now they own it free and clear. And it's worth, you know, maybe it's worth $1 million or $2 million. And it's going to take another $500,000 or $1 million to get it up to market. So to raise it from a 1 or 2 star park to a 3 star park, you know, so multifamily is A, B, C, D in kind of in quality, where mobile home parks are 4, 3, 2, 1 is how they work. You know, so if you own a park outright and you paid $500,000 for it, and you know, maybe it's two brothers that are school teachers, and this is an actual case study. We bought 5 parks from these brothers in Eastern Tennessee, and you know, they can't afford to invest, you know, $500,000 in their parks. That's their retirement. They're in their 60s. So, you know, you pick it up at 50% occupancy, you bring new homes in because you raise additional, you know, we raise additional capital to do that. We bring in a professional operating team. We're not just, you know, going door to door collecting rent, you know, two brothers trade off weeks and do that. So it's not really the size of the, you know, parks in terms of numbers. It's kind of like, you know, is it in that range, you know, say 20 to 300 units or 300 lots, you know, so that's a pretty broad range, but it's really, does it meet all those metrics that we want? And the last piece of that, William, is that to get good financing, you really need about 75% of the lots to be owner occupied, like where the residents own the home. And that's where we also specialize. We can come in and buy a park that's like 50% occupied. And, you know, even the rest may be park owned homes is what they say. But we have a debt fund that we also have kind of under our umbrella, where we'll buy the home, put it in the park, owner finance it, bring in somebody that purchases the home. So now we finance the home for them. they're paying us lot rent. They're also buying the home from us, but now they own the home. Just like if you're listening and you own your own home and you have a mortgage. So now you kind of it's win-win. But how do you come up with a $10,000 or $20,000 to buy the home? That's where we come in and our strategy.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Dude, man, you are just like a wealth of knowledge, man. Like this is so amazing. And I know Chris, I know you have some coaching and everything. And so I know that, I mean, this was just like a free coaching session just now. I hope
I love it.
You know, the value in this. So Chris, you know, before we go, I know we way past time, but tell us more about your program, because I'm sure that, you know, people are going to be listening and they're going to want more of that.
Well, first off, this has been fun. I just looked at the clock and, you know, time's flown by. So thank you guys for the opportunity.
Time flies when you're having fun, man.
That's right. Yeah. And thank you for the opportunity to share, you know, my story and that. And look, where we really try to strive, Charles, is we do try to offer value. So a few things. One, get a free copy of our book at nextlevelincome.com. Check out our podcast, subscribe to that. All that's available on the website, nextlevelincome.com. You can check out ChrisGPT and ask me questions. But if you're looking for more, if you want to learn about how to invest, click on the invest link. You can schedule a call with our team. You can learn about our current investments in the multifamily, mobile home park, express tunnel car wash space. We also have a debt fund that's paying 8% to investors right now. And that's liquid, so you can put your money in and get it back out, which is a cool option. If you want to learn more about our coaching, just go ahead and send us an email at coaching@nextlevelincome.com and say, hey, I heard Chris, love to learn a little bit more. We'll send you a book, share a little bit more, and we give you a free strategy session if you're listening. And we can learn a little bit more about what you're doing, what you're looking to do, and how we might be able to help you.
That's awesome, Chris. And Chris, did we miss anything, Chris? Anything our audience needs to know to become a breakthrough investor just like you?
Oh, boy. I'm sure I missed something. And again, that's why we have ChrisGPT, because he's smarter than I am and you can go back and ask. But look, I'm sure there's some stuff I didn't cover, Charles. If you're interested in something, check out our website. We've done hundreds of podcasts now. We got a lot of great information up there. And you can also just send us an email at info@nextlevelincome.com. If you have something that we missed that applies to you.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show, and look forward to hanging out with you soon in Asheville, man.
Please come on down, gentlemen. Great to be with you here this evening.
So we're going
to
be there.
There you go.
All right, man. All right. See you, brother.